Hello, welcome to the Mythology Marksmanship Podcast. I'm Morgan King, and I'm back with Paul Higley here. How are you doing, Paul?
Doing good, Morgan. How are you?
Oh, I hope the second time's a charm. We just started it, and then I'm just learning how to use a computer, so, you know, figuring it out.
Well, you sound all right. So,
yeah, I just don't know how to mess with the tracks, but I'm just glad to be in between tests at the moment.
So yeah, I'll bet that's a little hectic.
Oh yeah, you know, it's keeps me busy, that's for sure. But I imagine no busier than anybody else.
It is busy times.
Oh, yeah. Yep. Yep, it is.
So what's coming up? Are you going to make it to the championship?
It looks like it. The way it works in school is we have to be that we have required activities like tests, labs, stuff like that in vet school. And so most of the time in school, I've worked it out to where I can fly out Friday late and then turn around and fly home Sunday late and be home. Like if there's tests or anything, I'm able to be there on Friday for the tests and then home on Monday. And I've done that pretty successfully over the last 2 years. But
yeah, quite a few times.
Oh, man. This time it was not going to work, so I'm going to have to miss a test on Monday to get back. Moving up here to Washington, the airline situation isn't quite as convenient as it was down in Salt Lake, so I had to apply. For the first time, I had to apply for an absence, and it was painful. I don't like having to do that, so I don't like people knowing where I'm at all the time. I don't know. That's just my own flaw, I guess. So, but they said, yeah, I'm good to go, so I'm going to make it.
That's awesome.
Yep. What about with you? Anything?
Oh, yeah. I got a couple I'm going to go to. I'm going to go to California match this weekend.
Yep.
I need to get a few more points. I did get the invite to go to the championship finale, I guess. And then I went and bought a ticket to go to Georgia and shoot the MPA match the week after next. So I'm looking forward to those two, and hopefully I can up my placing and have a little practice under my belt for Finger Tennessee.
Yeah, it's bam, bam, bam for you, ain't it?
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, in fact, I've got ammo loaded for two matches, and then I'll have a week between to load again. So I think I'll be all right.
Oh, yeah.
As long as I can keep it tame at work, I'm going to be fine.
So, yep. Which your boy, he's good. He'll take care of everything at home.
Well, he's in Alaska right now, so I've been doing the double duty thing.
Oh, Dylan's still up there, huh?
Yeah, we lost her mother, my wife's mother.
Yeah.
And I flew up Thursday, come home Sunday. They stayed and went fishing yesterday, and they loaded up on salmon and halibut, suckers. So.
Sounds like you'll probably get some too.
Yeah, at least I'll get to eat it. I didn't get to go on the charter, dang it. But somebody had to come back and run the crane, so that was me.
Take care of the dogs.
Yeah, that too.
Yeah.
Them poor picked on dogs.
Well, good. I'm excited. I'm excited to see how you do here in California. I wanted to go. It just didn't work out. I got so many tests coming up. It's crazy. So this weekend, I got one on Friday, and then I got one on Monday, and for some reason, they think that's a good idea to first test. All of our tests this semester are on Friday and Monday, Friday and Monday. Oh. And I'm like, what is wrong with you guys? Let's change this up.
They don't want you to have a life.
No, Tuesday and Thursday sounds like great. Or like even Monday, even if it was Monday and Thursday, like some, nope, nobody does it on Friday and Monday. It's like, wow. Yeah. And they preach welfare, you know, like, hey, like we care about you. We want you to make sure you're doing good and all this, because vets, I guess, have the highest suicide rate. Like, we're not talking about veterans. I'm talking about veterinarians have the highest suicide rate of any career.
Wow.
Yeah, so there you go. We just passed Dennis a couple years ago.
Oh, man, I had no idea.
I'm not saying that I think that our suicide rate's higher than veterans. I do not know anything about that. I just mean like vets.
In careers,
I just wanted to distinguish that so nobody is mad at me saying that. I don't know that. But I'm saying veterinarians have the highest suicide rate in among professions, so, which is interesting. And so, like, there's this big push in school. We want to talk about how you should need to have this work-life balance and all this different stuff. But heaven forbid it start in school, you know, like that doesn't, that they're just saying afterwards, you got to figure that out. So they set the precedent like, hey, we think you should really not have a life at all, but then turn around when you're done, you should figure it out though. We would, heaven forbid, we teach you that.
Yeah, or practice by example. Huh?
Yeah. It's like, no, you have to be here, you have to do this, and you have to live your life this way. But then you should turn around and be able to tell an employer later why that's important.
Yeah.
But it's not important yet.
Huh.
So, I don't, anyways.
I wonder why that is, just.
They say it's emotional fatigue and then little things like work-life balance. People always pulling on you and you feel like you have a moral obligation to help them. Stuff. Doctors have the same thing. Yeah. And I don't know why Dennis would had the high suicide rate. That doesn't make sense to me. But not saying that they don't probably suffer from the same thing, but it doesn't matter. Anyways, this show is not about veterinarians.
Thank God.
Yeah. You can tell I mean.
Well, let's shut that down right now. Get down that dirt
let's,
road.
Let's huh? not go down that rabbit hole. That's enough of that. I have to worry about that all day long. So anyway.
Cool.
So yeah, you're gonna go down to California, and you're gonna shoot the what's that match called? That's like,
It's in Hollister.
Yeah.
Oh man, it slipped my mind.
Yeah, I can't well, the Hollister match. We'll call it Hollister match, and then you're gonna go to Georgia, the fall match in Georgia, down at Cool Acres.
Yep.
And that's always a good match. My gosh, that's a fun match.
I had a fun time last time I went there. It was last December.
Yeah, well, I mean, you want to talk about, and I mean, Brandon Henry, he's usually the match director down there, and I think Phil helps him out, or at least he's there because obviously he's
Brandon,
the title sponsor.
Brandon just got hired on at
K&M.
K&M.
But I imagine he's still running that match, I imagine. Still, right?
I think it's Mr. Allred running it.
Oh, who's that?
Allred.
Okay. Well, and if you're listening,
He was helping Brandon when we were
there. Probably know you, and don't be offended about that. I'm sure it'll still be a good match. I mean, it's hard to go wrong there. The nice thing about that match is, and what people appreciate is, it's not a huge location. In fact, it's pretty small, and so you're limited on. Like, I think sometimes creativity is good, and match directors do well by doing that, but then there's just beauty in having this ultra-simple, just shooting competition.
Right.
You know, there's no super hard stuff. It's just a matter of, hey, here's a target, here's a position, the position's solid, the target is doable, it's not big, it's small, the winds, you know, it's readable, it's not ultra tricky. The mirage might get you a little bit, but you know, just stay on your toes and don't make any mistakes. There's some beauty in that match.
Yeah, I like matches like that. I really do.
Yep. K&M sometimes does that. I don't know. K&M is one of those things where it's hard to prepare for that type of match.
Well, they progressively get smaller.
Yeah.
On some stages. Tricky winds at K&M.
That's what it is. The wind is just not honest.
Yeah. I just don't think you can trust what you see there. I think if a guy just held left center all day, he'd probably have pretty good success. But
yeah, I think
I can't convince myself to do that. But
no, center or left edge, you know.
Yeah, yeah.
And last time I went to that Cool Acres match, that we had a significant amount of wind there, which is crazy because it's. But I think there were. I don't know. I've been in Georgia when there was a hurricane coming, which sounds like you're headed down there, what, right after a hurricane's going through there?
Well, is there another one coming?
Well, I mean, I'm just saying it.
The one that just happened.
Been there, yeah.
Yeah.
So hopefully, I imagine it'll be a little better by the time you get there.
Yeah, I hope so.
I'm sure it'll be. I'm sure it'll, as you're going down there for the aftermath, but. So I guess talking about this, because. So I'm going to go to a local match here at the end of October. I haven't been able to, there hasn't been much going on up here. It's like, they said all the match directors kind of took September, October off. So I had a match in September, Paul Dallin's match, the Alpha Munitions Nutcrusher match, went to that one. And then there hasn't been any like local matches or anything. Shoot, I was even almost tempted to go to a 22 match a couple weeks ago because that's all there was. That's how desperate I've been getting, Paul.
You're hurting my ears.
Well, shoot, when that's all there is.
Yeah, we've been a little shy, too, because we got hunting season going on, and I think everybody's just taking a break and breathing in. I took the opportunity to be the regional director down here for Rocky Mountain. And I'm trying to get schedules worked up and trying to get match directors and get this all figured out for 2023. And we're going to start in on it hard again in November. John put one on for Manti, September. I went to that one. I've done pretty good except for the last two stages. That wind thing, you know.
Yeah.
But, we had a little front come in and it picked up. And
I heard about that.
A couple uncharacteristic gusts and just the luck of the draw.
Yep. So speaking of wind. Right. It's a super interesting topic, right? Wind is this intriguing topic for everyone, including me. I mean, we can talk about wind forever, right? Like, it's just this, it's so complex because how do you read it, right? There's no, like, because I can take an average here, like, I can get an average velocity, right where we're standing, but and I can be like, man, I think the direction is this and all this stuff, and I can do that, and I can come up with some wing call, and I can develop like a little system of how I get a wing call, and I can get really, really good at it in one location, but then I show up to another place and everything I did, not everything, some of the things that I did in one location doesn't translate to the next location. And there's, it's kind of almost nerve-wracking when you haven't been to a place and to know like what works, what doesn't work. But there is things that consistently work from place to place, and they're hard. Sometimes you don't know. Like, I'm trying to explain it in a way that's concise and makes sense, but like I think there are certain things that always work. At least they're going to work some of the time at each location, right?
Right.
What
I you know, those head and tail winds are tricky. They'll always be tricky.
Yep.
They're hard to read. I think most people overcompensate. And
what do you mean by overcompensate?
Well, if you got a 1 o'clock wind, I think that they're maybe holding off the plate and then missing off the, you know, say holding right edge and missing right. That's, you know, I do that a lot. If I just stay in the center of the plate, I think I'd do a lot better on a headwind.
So I think on headwinds,
at least figure it out, you know.
Yeah, I think
see which way the plane's rocking.
Yeah, I think on headwinds, a lot of people, or tailwinds, if it's from left or right, people undercompensate, and if it's right to left, they overcompensate.
Yeah, yeah.
That's my theory, and those are broad generalizations, right? That's not always the case.
Well, the only thing different, I think, there is your spin drift. You know.
Oh, yeah. It is, yeah. For sure.
But I caught myself doing that in France, you know, with that 2 days of just 1 o'clock, 11 o'clock, switch, you know, and they were, you know, progressively smaller targets, or started out small and got the bigger ones, you know. I just found myself holding off the plate and then watching the bullet go right square in my crosshairs. It's like, oh, you dummy, you did it again.
So I guess I got a question I'm thinking of right now that I'd like to ask you, because you're going to these matches, right? So what are some things right now? So you've got a match. It's Wednesday. Or no, sorry, it's Tuesday. And the match, you fly out, I'm assuming, Friday morning.
Yeah.
Okay, you're going to fly out Friday morning, and you're going to get there, zero, blah, 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 whatever. But what are some things you're going to do from now and then that are going to help you? Because I know a lot of people don't think about it. They think about, like, they have the thought on their mind. There's a little anxiety of, like, hey, what's the wind going to be like? And they're like, and then they might hear, oh, the weather says it's going to be super high. Or is there anything that's going on in your mind or things that you do to get to start, like, thinking about wind or weather, or is there anything you think about?
You know, I got this wonderful weather app, and you can't really tell what's going to happen Friday, other than it'll give you a daily of what the wind's going to do. But I've been looking for the last 10 days on an average.
Which weather app is it called?
Well, I'm just using the Channel 2 one, and I'm looking at the hour by hour what's going on each day. And it's pretty consistent of that wind coming from the west and then changing about 10 o'clock and coming from southeast. So we get the coastal wind, you know, coming off the ocean in the morning. And then there's about an hour of where I think it's just going to be switchy as can be, and then it's going to be consistent pretty much from the east. And I'm seeing that, probably 4 out of 5 days.
And that's just and that's based off of just Hollister?
Yeah. And it's only a few miles out of Hollister, the match, from what I understand.
Let me look it up on.
So that's.
Because now I'm curious.
Yeah, I probably need a better weather. I got the Weather Channel too. Yeah. And I look between the two.
I like weather underground for like rain and precipitation and all that. I've just always used it just because it seemed like it's been fairly good. Let me see if I can. It's obviously not on my iPad, but it's on my. The one I use a lot, though, for like direction.
Yeah.
Because I can actually put my. I can put my location in is windy.com, I think, or it's called windy.app is what it says on here, but it's just windy. But let me look up Hollister, California. Okay, right here. Oh, it says we're offline. Weather station is offline.
Uh-oh.
Oh, boy.
Well, good thing I looked at it yesterday.
Well, let me just look at this one. This is a different one. Retry. Why is it saying that? Well, okay, now I got the forecast. But yeah, it says, let's see if we can go to Friday. Doesn't look too bad, Paul.
No.
It looks like you got that. So it's showing me. So anyways, you can go into this app and it shows you can pull it up on the map. So you can have it search your location. And then it'll show you like me, I'm looking at 8 o'clock in the morning. It says the wind is coming from the west to the east. So it's a west wind, and then it becomes a northwest wind, and it's a north wind at 10 o'clock in the morning, and then it's a northeast wind, and then it goes all the way to east by noon. Yep. And so that's
kind of a
cool.
Witching hour right in there.
Yeah,
I was thinking south, but I guess it is north.
Yeah, but it starts off like real early in the morning. It's like a south. West southwest. And then it's west, and then it comes up. But anyways, by the time you're shooting, which is 8, it says straight right to left or west wind. Well, it's not right to left. It's a west wind because who knows what direction you're shooting. But it's just 2 miles an hour. It doesn't get to 4 miles an hour until 1 o'clock in the afternoon. 2 o'clock at 6 and 3 o'clock at 7. And that's going to be a east wind or a west wind. Coming from the west.
Well, coming from the east by then.
No, I screwed it up.
Oh, still
it's
west.
It's starting from the east, and then it comes, and then it goes to the north, and then it comes from the west. Yeah, I went the wrong direction in my mind.
What app is that one?
This is Windy.
Windy?
Which is, it's a cool app. And then the next day, you're supposed to be. So now if we're on Sunday, it's about the same. It gets up a little bit higher, but still not till 12. It gets to 4 and then 5 at 1, 6 at 2, 7 at 3, and 7 at 4. So by the time you're done, it's only going to be 7 o'clock or 7 mile an hour wind. But
yeah, and that's going to be 10 rounds on site or 10 stages on Saturday, 8 stages on Sunday, and starting 7:30 on Sunday. So I'll bet we're done shooting by 1:30.
Yeah.
Sunday. So
this is one of those things where I'll do the same thing. I'll look at the app, and then I look at like old rain and stuff, and it helps me decide on clothes and all that. But a lot of times, like I look at that, and it kind of calms me down. But I'll look at it the morning of. And look and be like, hey, is there a time where it's supposed to completely switch directions in this day? And like, what's the general direction it's supposed to be? And what's the overall predicted velocity of wind that it's supposed to be? And I might look at it from my location because I can do that and kind of get an idea of what the radar predicts here. And that's kind of a cool tool to be able to do that.
You know, I used that when I went. I went to Tennessee in what, May. Mm-hmm. I wanted to go shoot there before the finale because I knew the finale was there. I wanted to at least get one under my belt. Glad I did. But, you know, with those trees as tall as they are, it's a, you know, I think it's a great idea to look at those apps and see which way the wind's blowing. It gives you somewhat of an idea, you know.
Yeah, and velocity. You know, like, hey, this is what it's supposed to be. And there's a gust column, too, in there that I didn't talk about. But there's a little thing where it says, hey, the gusts are supposed to be right up top. There's an average, and there's a gust. And it's like here, it's supposed to be an average of 2, or right here, or it's an average of 2 and gusts up to 4, you know, like, okay, I can deal with that, you know. So it's just one of those things where you can be able to see. It gives you somewhat of an idea. It's enough to calm your nerves and get you thinking like, hey, this is what I'd be thinking about. There could be a switch around this time to expect. And you can look at it the day of or whatever, but it's something to think of. Because I think a lot of people, you know, the thought is on their mind, like they might be a little nervous about the wind, but they don't know anything to do. And that's something that you could do. It obviously doesn't replace anything on the day of, right?
No, I think it's more than anything, it maybe helps you sleep that night, or, you know, a little comfort.
Yeah. Yeah.
And knowing, and I don't know, Mark and I'm riding down there with Mark Miller, and he asked me a couple weeks ago what the wind did in California. I says, well, you know, I've been to 3 different matches in 3 different locations, and it all did something different. So I'm not sure what Hollister's going to be all about, but I started watching it shortly after that. And it seems pretty consistent day to day. You know, we're going to get mid 80s. I think it's going to be wonderful weather. And it's always a pretty good match.
Mid 80s?
Yeah, is that what it says? Or did that change too?
I don't know, but that's freaking hot.
Well, yeah.
Especially when we come from, you know, 60s.
I don't know. I think it was 71, 72 today.
Oh, okay. Well, then that's not too bad. I'm just thinking up here, it's, you know, in the mornings, it hasn't got much over 65, 70. But
I move a lot better on mid-80s than I do in 60s.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I remember.
That's teenager weather for me.
Oh, yeah.
Much hotter than that, then I might stroke out. But
I remember I landed on a runway once in California in December, and I was fixing to stay there for a while, and I remember getting off and seeing the freaking mirage come off the runway, and went, "Well, boy, welcome to hell."
Yeah,
yeah, but no, California's beautiful. The weather probably will be awesome. So. Now I want to switch. So now here we are, first stage of the day, and you show up. What are, because we talked, there's things that are different at every place, and you don't know until you take that first shot. How are you going to get your first wind call? So let me give you a scenario of, like, you've got this, we're going to say there's just 2 targets, one at 600, or one at 400, one at 600, just near to far. And they're half mil plates, so just a regular standard scenario. What are the things that you're gonna look at in order to come up with a good wind call?
Well, I guess the direction of each plate. If I got a pan for one, if it's gonna be a different degrees than the other one, that's gonna be the first thing I'm gonna do. You know, I trust the Kestrel. First thing I'm going to do is calibrate that thing and point it at the targets and get my degrees.
So you're saying calibrate the direction?
Well, yeah.
The compass?
The compass, the machine itself, yeah. And, of course, I'm going to visual. I'm going to look at grass. I'm going to feel the wind, and, you know, maybe throw a little dust in the air. See if I can see anything at the targets, you know, anything, a leaf, a blade of grass, what it's doing, get a good idea of what it's doing, and then get my coordinates on them, point the Kestrel into the wind, and use my target card. I guess is about how I do it.
What do you put in for values?
Well, I'll try and get on a high point or get somewhere that's not obstructed, and I'll go right to my wind meter. I don't use the wind on the target card to get my values.
You don't use the capture function, correct?
No.
You use
I'll let it run for a minute or maybe two. It depends on how much time I got, especially first stage. I got a lot of time, you know, setting up. So I'll just hold that thing there for a while and get me an average.
Yeah, you go to the weather screen, right? And then you take an average of the wind speed in the weather mode, not ballistics mode, correct?
Yeah, correct.
Yep.
Yeah, I think you get you get real time, I guess, is what you get out of that.
Yeah.
And then I'll adjust it in the app, in the app, and I'll go to all wind and put in my speeds.
You mean in the Kestrel?
Yeah, in the Kestrel.
Yeah, then you adjust
on the ballistics part.
Like the direction and the velocity brackets that it spits out, you adjust that manually, correct?
Yes.
Yep.
I feel like I'll do that on every stage. I feel like that I got a better chance of winning that way.
Yeah.
Winning the wind.
Yeah.
Anyway, you know.
Because I think the two most important things that you put in there, well, it's the only two inputs, but I think the most important thing that you can do is get the right direction and have good, relevant velocity brackets. So, like, if you're shooting in a wind where you put your Kestrel up and it says the bottom end, your minimum that you read was 2 miles an hour and the maximum you read was 8 miles an hour, but the average is 4, I'm probably going to do a 2-4-6 bracket because the 8 was probably, or I'm probably going to do a 3, or the average was 4 or 5. I'm probably going to do a 3, a 5, and a 7 bracket because those are relevant. Those are something I can use for sure.
And right.
Then,
well, it also gives you an idea. All right, can you know how what's my spread on 3 and 8 or 3 and 7? You know, am I leaving the plate? Am I leaving the plate at that?
Or, yeah.
You know, I mean, it's not going to be any more than that. So, it tells me that it's going to be less than a half mil. I'm not going to leave that plate.
Well, and shoot, I might even run a 2 and an 8 and be like, okay, so if a 2 at going left or right, that's, I got to hold a 10th and a half of wind. Yeah. But at
400.
And at 800 or at 400 and at 8 miles an hour, I only got to hold, you know, 5 or 6. Well, shoot, I can put all of that wind on the plate. I can put a tenth and a half on the left edge. I can put, you know, 6/10 on the right edge and pull the trigger. And in theory, I can't miss the plate.
And then just pay attention to which way that plate rocks. You know, hopefully you're not hitting a popper.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's the only downfall of poppers. I mean, you can hit them for 15,000 rounds. They won't break. But boy, it's just real hard to see what side of the plate you're hitting on those things.
Yeah,
for me,
you got to be really dialed in and be really watching for the splash and changes in color on the plate to be able to see those hits.
Yeah,
but it's definitely doable. So the other thing I think is I do look at terrain to especially, so like California, you might have to look at terrain. Georgia, terrain isn't much of a issue. It's flat, but you might have to look at the trees and the way it flows through the trees. K&M, that's especially a deal.
Oh, yeah.
Like an aerial view of K&M is almost more important than your Kestrel.
Yeah, probably. I've looked at that. It's, but, you know, back to California, you're right. There's a lot of little ravines, little washes you're going to shoot across that, you know, can change, you know, direction of wind and and funnel wind and make it, you know, stronger in those points too. So, that's why I say, you know, you get a visual down there and see what you're seeing, you know, check your mirage at different, you know, different yardages.
Yeah. Mirage is one of those things where I think mirage varies from place to place. And I don't think people realize that.
Yeah.
Cause I think people go off of these old, quite dated, I might add, philosophies on mirage, right? Like they see these old handbooks that people talk about where if the mirage is at this angle, it means 5 miles an hour. And if it's at this angle, it means 7 miles an hour. And it's like, yeah, I don't know about that. I mean, if you've been in enough different places, the mirage itself looks different in each place. Like,
oh, yeah.
You go to K&M and you see the mirage there, and you see mirage where back in the West Coast, if you saw that same mirage, and I'm not talking about mirages in like the heat waves that I'm saying they are heat waves, but not the type that makes your target disrupts your target. But I'm saying just that when you're looking at it and you're seeing the wind in it, and it, when you're seeing that and you see it laid over, like, and it's, you know, it's like almost on a 45 degrees. If you see that out here, a lot of times that means we have to hold some wind, boys. Like, and not a little bit. Like, you, I mean, that really might be that.
It's probably 10 plus at that out here.
Not quite that, you think?
Yeah.
I think a lot of times, that no matter where you're at between 10 and 15, it lays over all the way.
Pretty flat.
Yeah. But in between there, sometimes like out here, so back there, it seems like at 5 miles an hour, it's laid flat. But out here, it might take 12 mile an hour to lay it flat. You know what I mean? So if you're at 45 degrees,
I do.
45 degrees back there might be 3 miles an hour, and it might be 7 here. You know, it just does. You never know. So for me, a lot of guys go off of that, and I'm like, they'll be like, oh, what? I've had people ask me, like, what velocity do you think that is? And I'm like, I have no idea. It looks left or right. I'm not going to guess, but I'll use it for direction a lot. But I try to get two data points there. Like, if I see mirage left or right, and I see grass or something left or right, then I'll say the wind is most likely left or right. But sometimes
you can bank on that.
Yeah. But sometimes it's tough.
It is. Well, mirage turns a little later than the wind does too, I've noticed, you know. And
oh, yeah.
Some of the places I've been. It'll cheat you.
Yeah, I've learned that you don't want to put your destiny in the hands of mirage. Like, it's just not, it's not what you want to hang your hat on at night. You want to come up with something else. You want to come up with, now, is it okay? Like, I use mirage a lot when I'm on the clock.
It's about the only thing you got time to look at.
Sometimes, yeah, I try to have a, sometimes I'll have some, like, a piece of grass or something like that that's close to a target that I'll look at, you know. But especially on one that I'm worried about, right? A half mil plate at 400 yards, I'm probably going to just roll with the mirage. But if there's a 2/10 plate on a KYL rack and I've got to be able to make a real-time adjustment as we're going, I'm probably going to find which little blade of grass by that target is going to give me an indicator within a field of view of it. So I can get a second data point before I pull the trigger.
And you're going to find that before you ever go up and the clock starts.
Oh, 100%. Yeah, that's a good point. Yeah. Yes.
These are all pre-planned scenarios.
Yeah, this is not something that you do while you're on the clock. There's just not time for that. There's not time to process that.
No.
There's enough time to close the bolt and say, what do I hold? or like on the sense of a KYL. I just held 4/10 and I'm going to the next one. And I'm pretty sure I hit right of center, and I want to know if I need to correct off that, or if I need to roll with it. And meaning, like, I barely hit right of center, and we're talking, I just hit a 3/10 plate barely right of center, maybe a 0.5, and now I'm going to a 2/10 plate. Do I make it that little add? Do I add, go from holding 2/10 to holding the 1/4 mil mark because I was just shading it barely right of center, and so now do I go to that? Well, maybe I'm going to look at the mirage. Did the mirage pick up? Is that why it moved? Or is that just where, you know, one of my rounds got sent over there because of what? Who knows? And then is the grass blowing a little bit harder? Did it pick up? Maybe I need to add a little bit. And a lot of times, like, I'm probably
going to. I don't know. Take the shot.
Yeah. Those thoughts.
You're running out of time.
Those thoughts don't take that long, right? Yeah. Yeah. You're right. I mean.
Yeah.
You know how it is. I'm just sitting there as none of those things come to a full, like, I don't fully spell that out of my brain. I just go, okay, that one was there. And then all of a sudden my mind automatically just goes, did it pick up? Nope.
Yep.
And then I go, well, I'm still going to cheat it. Boom, pull a trigger. And then, or I'll be like, oh yeah, it picked up, and then maybe maybe shade my 1/4 left now. So now I add a 1/10 instead of just a 0.5 because I caught it on the pickup, you know. Those are the little ideas, but you don't have to do any of that. But I guess it's hard because really after you shot the first stage, you lose. Now you have some data to go off of, so now it makes it easier from then on. But since these matches are won by such a small margin, or even, you know, the difference of 5 points can change you 10 places nowadays.
Yeah.
To me, it's really important to get a good signalment on what the wind is in this location prior to shooting that first stage.
Well, I agree.
I agree
100%. That first stage is a nemesis for a lot of people. You know, it's hard on guys. You know, whether it's, you know, they're too much coffee that morning, or if they just flat got the jitters. You know, I still get that first stage jitter stuff.
Yeah.
And that's why I spend so much time in the glass, so much time, you know, doing, you know, what, pre-flight stuff.
Well, and part of the jitters is the wind, right? I mean, it scares the crap out of guys, right? I mean, it scares anybody. And I think it's a healthy respect we all should have, right? Like,
oh yeah,
you'd be kidding yourself not to have a healthy respect for it. But I think at the same time, like, you need to have respect for it, but you don't need to be scared of it. And how do you become not scared of it? And that is what I'm kind of trying to talk about. There needs to be some sort of system. Like, understand that the wind that you see at the new location, it will not be the same as your home at your home range. It's just not going to be the same. And so expect that, right? Yeah, I know.
All I can say is good.
Yeah. Well,
you ever shot at my home range? Yeah, you have.
Yeah, I have. That'll make a guy good, though.
Yeah.
Ask me how I know.
Very challenging. It is very challenging.
I know. That place will kick your teeth in, and then you'll turn around and go clean. Just some of the nastiest shit in the whole country. Ask me how I know.
Right.
But it's a fun place.
It is. It's got all those little valleys and washes, and, you know, that we were talking about earlier. It's very challenging. It's got a little alleyway that, you know, goes around a knob, and the wind does all kinds of strange things there.
Oh, yeah. So now I got another question. So say you get it wrong, right? Say you shed in the first round and you're like, son of a gun, and you missed it by like 0.3. Now what do you do?
Well, you measure and adjust and hope you got a wind column that'll get you there, if not to the center, but maybe, you know, take you to the edge, or, you know, maybe you got to switch.
What do you mean by that? So, center or take it to the edge, what do you mean?
Well, you know, if you're bracketing your wind and say you're 3 mile an hour is on the left edge and you're 7 or 8 mile an hour is on the right edge and you're 0.3 off, then if you need another 3 miles an hour, then rather than center, you hold to the edge and that gives you another bracket.
Well, that only you're saying 3 miles an hour is on one edge and you're 7 miles an hour is on the other edge.
Yeah.
So it gives you about 2.5 miles an hour to go to the edge. Yeah, I guess.
Yeah.
Or no, it gives you 2 miles an hour. Yeah.
Yeah, 2.5.
Well, no, because you have a 3 to 7 is a 0.4.
Oh, yeah, that's 4.
Or it's 4 miles an hour. So it'll give you 2 miles an hour. Well, kind of.
It'll give you.
It's close enough, right?
Yep.
But, yeah, that's not a bad way to do it. If that's what only thing you got.
If that's the only thing you got. But definitely measure and, you know, and get it over there where it needs to be.
Yeah, I guess my, that's the perfect answer. That is the answer. But I think so many people get caught in the, and I don't know, and I talked about this on the last podcast you know, how much capacity we have in that moment to be able to think about it and make the proper correction. But so many people, there is an emotion, right? That comes along with that, because now you failed. You did not get the wind right, and it was something that you had anxiety over anyways, and then you mess it up. The reason why you have the anxiety, because it's so hard to get anyways. But I think there's this temptation to kind of lose your mind in that moment. And I think just without emotion, without even any thought, just like a machine, you know, it went over here. You just got to measure, correct, boom, center it up.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's the first thing you do before you do anything else. At least me, you know, that way I get the correct measurement.
Yep.
Then I'll run my bolt. Then I'll change positions.
Yep.
And then I got a new plan.
Yeah, say you held a quarter, but it hit where you needed like 0.6 or something like that, over like splitting your half and your 3/4 mark on a Mark V. You just don't even think about it. Just boom, pop over, pull the trigger, right?
Right.
Or just immediately measure. Like, oh, I need 0.6. That gives me that means I'm in my 8 mile an hour bracket now, and you go to the next target, and that means you got to hold a mill for that one. You pull the trigger, boom, hit it, move on. Because
that's exactly right.
I mean, a lot of people I feel like I'm as good as anybody out there in the PRS game at making a wing call. I feel like, and I still get it wrong plenty of times, right? But If I just, you know, like put my head in my hands and went, son of a gun, and I'm not saying people do that, but I do see a lot of times when a guy will do confirmation misses. You know?
Well, yeah, exactly. Was that me? Did I jerk the trigger? Or did it, maybe you didn't see where it hit. But still.
Yeah.
Don't put it in the same spot.
Well, that's the thing. If you didn't see it, well, what do you know based on your last pull on the trigger? What do you know? You know the target is a half a mil, right?
Yep.
I'm always drawing stuff on my thing. I don't even know why I don't need to, but I do.
So I'm like, television show.
I'm like drawing this for my I'm drawing this for myself on my iPad as I'm talking. But like seriously, you got a half a mil plate, right? And it's a half mil circle. And you're sitting there and you're like, okay, you just held in the middle of the plate. You just held, and I, you know what? And I talk, everybody, I'm going to be inclusive and I'm going to talk instead of in quarters. I'll talk in tenths, you know? So I held, 3/10 to the middle of this plate, right? So yeah. I held 3/10 to the middle of the plate. What do I know based on the first shot? Well, I didn't see where it hit. Doesn't matter. What do I know? Okay, that means from if it's a half a mil wide, well, let's call it 6/10 because it's easier math. That means I held left edge of the plate. Okay?
Yeah.
So the only thing I do know is from 0 to 0.6 left, that all that shit doesn't work. None of it. Yep. That means everything on your reticle from 0 to 6/10 is now means that's bogus. It does you no good. It is, that means if any of that is on the plate, you already know for sure that did not work. So let's
that
just
means it means one of two things: either the wind completely switched on you, or you need to hold 3/4 of that plate.
So what do you do now? Well, no, that means you need to go. You need to take your 6/10 mark and put it inside the left edge. Or you need to put 0 inside of the right edge. But what, right? Because I move in what I call I call it the 90% rule. Okay. I move 90% of plates if I don't see something. 75 to 90, somewhere in there. I'm going to move, in this case, since it's a 6/10 target, I'm going to move in half mil increments. Right?
Yep.
So if I held 3/10, I'm either going to hold 8 or I'm going to hold 2 right. No. How's that work? No, I'm going to hold. Yeah, 8 to the middle or 2 right to the middle, which is, but I don't think in those terms. I put my wind back exactly where I put my reticle back exactly where I was on the plate. So I don't have to know dimensions or anything. It's just stupid easy. I just do that. And then I look at the whichever edge I thought my round might have went off of based off of other things. Like I'll look at the mirage at this moment. I will take a second and look at grass. I'll look at anything to know, like, because obviously there was a change, right?
Yep.
So I'm going to take that second to look at where the change was. If I didn't, this is saying that I don't see dust somewhere. If I see dust, it's easy. I just move and correct, pull the trigger. But if I don't see the dust, for whatever reason, my fundamentals were bad.
If you don't have any idea where that bullet went, you just know it didn't hit the plate.
Yep, that's all I know. And so if it's a skyline target, for whatever reason, there's various reasons why we don't see it. Because not everybody sees every bullet every time, but it's important that you have a plan for when you don't see it. And so this is my plan, because there's a couple things I know. And then, so I put my reticle right back in the middle of the plate, and then I look at the edge that I think I missed off of. So if I think the wind picked up, that means I'm going to look at my downwind edge, which in this case would be 6/10. And I look at it and go, okay, that's the 6/10 mark on the edge. And then I go, and then I take the 6/10 mark and put it just inside of the other edge. I just move my reticle over to just inside of the other edge, which, and then I pull the trigger, which that ends up being 8/10 to the middle of the plate and a mil on the downwind edge about.
Right.
Or one.
And that should cover it.
That should cover your wind. That's a lot of wind. That means you're covering, in two shots, you're going from 0 to 1 mil all covered on the plate. It's like 1-1. It's 1-1. Sorry. Because it's 1-1 on the downwind edge. That means you're covering 1.1 mils of wind at, you know, say 600 yards or something. You're covering that in two shots. If you didn't hit it on the second shot, maybe think about something else. Because that's
maybe
a lot.
Go the other side,
or check your elevation turret, or something else, right?
Right.
And
right.
Unless it really legitimately picked up that much, and you just had no idea, But most of the time, with that second shot, hits the plate. And then it gives you something to read, too, because now all of a sudden you see, oh, yep. I hit it on the upwind side. That time you saw it, right? And you see, oh, yep. I hit it upwind. I hit it right at my 7/10 mark or my 8/10 mark or something like that, you know? Or it would be...
Now you just need to settle back in a couple and...
Yeah, 7/10 mark, you know, you just, then you just drop her down, hold 7 on the rest of them, and you'd be like, dang it, I just must have missed off the edge and didn't see it, you know, and then the rest of them, 0.7 does it, and then you're like, okay, and then you go back, and anyways, that's what I think, that's one of those, just kind of a thought I had rolling around in my brain.
Yeah, I agree 100%, it's a good way to go.
Yep. So, yeah. Another question. What are you doing to get ready for the finale? Big jump in topic.
Yeah. I got my new barrel's got 1,300 rounds on it. My old one's got about 1,900. So my big question right now, do I go see our buddy Garrett and a rebarrel? But both guns are still shooting real well, but that's going to be my third match, too, between the two guns. So I just don't have time right now to break in a barrel, so I think I'm going to gamble and shoot the old reliable. See how it goes this weekend and maybe switch off to the new one for the next two.
So this weekend you're going to shoot the one with 1,800 and then the next one you're going to shoot the 1,300 rounder for the next two?
Yep. And that'll take it up to about 18 on the finish.
Yep, just about. That'll be all right. Then you'll have two wore out barrels.
Yeah. Then we'll barrel them both and be ready for next year.
That's a good plan. You know, in all reality, these barrels probably can go a little bit farther on a six, but is it, like, for as much as we travel, and this is what people ask me, they'll be like, how much barrel life do you think, how much barrel life do you think I should expect, to get out of my dasher or whatever, because people are very concerned about barrel life sometimes, and I used to be too, but I'm a lot less concerned. Well, I'm concerned about it in the fact that I don't want it to bite me anymore, you know. So,
right.
So now I play it safe, right? And so when people ask me, I mean, I understand where they're coming from, but like I used to take a barrel to dang near on a dasher, I would still take them to 3,000 rounds. And a lot of them will make it to 3,000 rounds. I figured that out. But what I started happening is I'm flying around places because I didn't used to travel like I do. But now all of a sudden I start traveling, and then you have a barrel go out at say 2,500 rounds.
Mm-hmm.
And now you're at a match, and luckily I didn't have one go out at 2,500 rounds at any big matches, but. You know, but I've had one go out at about 1,500 to 1,800 rounds. Well, it was like 18. No, I had one go out at 1,000, right? I had one go out at 1,000, and that's a fluke deal, right? That's not very often they ever go out at 1,000. That's just a bad barrel. But
right.
And it seems like if they make it to 1,000, they're probably going to make it to 2,500. But I never really had great luck as far as like they never really went bad after 2,500, but they never really shot as good as they do at, like I think from 500 rounds to 1,500 rounds, a dasher shoots amazing. It seems like that's like their sweet spot, and then 2,000 to 2,500 they usually shoot pretty good, and then after that they shoot okay. That seems like about what I've noticed, but between 2,000 and 2,500, there's a transition between good and okay, and I don't really want to figure out where that is, right?
Right.
And
well, that's what I'm trying to do is keep them both under two.
Yep. That's why I mean,
or thereabouts, you know. So.
Yep. Yep.
And I don't want to risk it. Now my 6.5 Creeds, it seems like if they make it to 1,000, they make it to 3,000. But I don't really like taking them past 2,000 either. But sometimes, man, if they shoot good, it's hard not to.
Yeah, you know, and it doesn't happen, like you say, it doesn't happen very often, but to put a new barrel on and then go break it in.
Takes time.
If I got something screwy in the first 100 rounds, you know, going on with that barrel, if you know, if it's different speed or something isn't quite right with it, I'm fighting real hard to get a group, you know. I'm not going to waste any more ammo on it.
Yeah.
We're going to go get another barrel. I used to waste a ton of ammo trying to get those barrels to shoot, you know, and then you're out there 600-700 rounds, and you finally throw it away, and you're just thinking, man, I just spent what that barrel cost in ammo, you know.
Oh yeah.
And plus the frustration and the time. So, yep. Live and learn, I guess, on that one. At least that's my analogy. If I get a screwy barrel, it's gone. Oh, it's like a cheating wife.
I was gonna say, you may as well tell it like you tell me. It's like a bad woman. That echoes in my ears every time I have a bad barrel, or if a gun doesn't shoot a great group. Because I don't know. And
if you don't trust it, there's no relationship.
No, 100%. I agree, because I mean, you know, and this is maybe something hard for a lot of people that are newer to you know, because especially or people that are out of this country that wait absurd amount of time to get to get a barrel done, and then all of a sudden you get it, and then it shoots an inch or 3/4 of an inch, and you're just like, wow, my Tika shoots better than this thing.
Right.
For whatever reason.
It does happen.
And
my advice is just get rid of it, you know, especially if it's a dasher, because they are the easy button. And if you got something screwy going on, you know, it is the barrel.
It's sometimes even people like 6.5 Creedmoor, same deal. I feel like they shoot so good. Or like a 6.5 47 Lapua. And then they get a barrel and then they shoot it. And they're so excited, and I understand, because I'm excited too when I get a new gun, and you get it back and you shoot it, and then it just doesn't do what you think it should do. And this is just with the old load, because you're like, I'm gonna go out and shoot and make sure, but then you're like, I'll do some load development. So then you shoot 150 rounds, and then you start load development, and so you've shot 150 rounds of just 1-inch crap, and then you okay, I'm gonna start doing load development and think I'm going to go back and I'm going to get real fancy and do 2/10 of powder out and do 5 shots and do all this and then shoot 10 5-shot groups. So 50 more rounds, and they all measure, you know, like you'll get lucky. And out of that, you're going to get a bunch of like an inch, and then you're 3/4 of an inch. Then you're going to get that like 1/2-inch group, and then back up to an inch. And then you're going to get this, you know, this one that shoots like 0.3, and then you're going to go back to an inch or whatever, and then you're going to go, man, that 0.3 one's going to shoot good, man. And then you go back, and then you load up 100 of those or 200 of those, and then you go to the match, because now your gun has 200 rounds on it, and so it's broke in, ready to go. And then you show up to 0 day, and it shoots 3/4 of an inch again, and you're like, what the crap is going on? Well, what happened? And this is the thing that people are going to hate to hear, but that's statistics for you, folks. What a lot of people don't realize in load development, there's three things I feel like and I heard this a long time. Well, I read this a long time ago from like a bench rest guy, and the guy said there's 3 B's to accuracy, and he says barrels, bullets, and what was the other one? Brass. Barrels, bullets, and brass. Because what you don't realize is the old bench rest boys, they used to use volumetric deals. and they would just get the right volume in the case, and they would do that and make sure that the volume was right and kind of tweak seating depth or whatever, but the barrels just shot, you know, those things just hammered. And like they're and since they're using volume, like they're literally a throw that they would just throw it. And these guys are setting world records at 100-yard bench rest, you know, with these flat base bullets and doing all that, with a just throwing it off a powder throw and then seating the bullet and throwing them in their gun. You know, they were. I really have a tough time believing, especially having sat through enough statistics classes, to believe that five shots is going to tell you whether or not that that is a good load. Because I guarantee if you had 10 or 15 of those same load, overall you're going to get, like if you shot each one of those loads, like if you shot 50 rounds, and Brian Litz recently released something on this, but me and Francis had talked about this a couple times before this, where load development is one of those things where, and I'm probably going to get a lot of hate for this because a lot of people have a lot of emotion and a lot of time tied up in load development. And I'm not saying that it's completely doesn't work. I'm saying that it might not work to the degree that we think it does, and it might take a larger volume to be able to notice differences. And the difference that we can make is going to be, it's hard, because when you're saying you're talking average group size over, say, I want to know what my barrel's going to do over the course of 200 rounds, because we generally shoot 200 round matches. So what's going to give me an accurate representation of that? Five rounds probably isn't, because statistically, that's not going to be a statistically significant number, right? Like,
well, 20 rounds will give you what, a tenth, you know, a tenth of 200, I guess.
Yeah. It'll give you a tenth, but we got to figure out a number, and I can't remember what it is, but, I'd have to run the statistics. But to be able to accurately say, okay, I want to know if my average group size is 0.4 at 100 yards, or let's call it 0.3 because it's easier statistics. If my average group size is 0.3 minutes or inches at 100 yards, to be able to determine if that what the number is that will accurately predict that what is a group, a number of shots that make up a group that will accurately represent what your that is a statistically significant number. Like, but when I say average group size, let's call it the extreme spread of your group, the extreme spread of your average group size. In that, anyways, Brian Litz says the standard deviation, if your average group size, the standard deviation of your average group size, he said, generally is about a third of whatever your average is, he said. And if statistically, what that means is a standard deviation generally means if you times your standard deviation by 3, then you take your average and go one side of it and then the other side of it, and 97% of your data will be within those. So if your average is 0.3, that means you 30% of that is 0.1. That's your standard deviation. Times 3, that's 0.3. So your extreme spread is going to be your smallest group you'll shoot over the course of, we're saying over the course of the whole life of the barrel, the smallest group you're going to shoot, or 97% of the time, you will shoot a group that is in the zeros. But you will also shoot a group that's 0.6. So 97% of the round, the groups that you shoot will be between 0 and 0.6 if the average group size is 0.3. So if you want to go up from there, so if you're at 6 tenths, So 0.6 MOA, if that's your average group size, that means that, again, zero will be the smallest group that you shoot, but the highest group you shoot is 1.2 MOA.
Hmm.
So that's your average group size. So if you're saying average group size is 0.6, you're going to shoot a group that's in the zeros, but you're also going to shoot a group that's over an inch. So, and that's just statistics. So I want a gun that's more like this 0.3 gun. The average group size is 0.3, but I'm not worried if I shoot this 0.6 MOA group. But I don't get like, man, this is the best gun I've ever shot. And, if it shoots one group in the zeros, you know.
Right.
But I know that if I shoot 5-10 shot groups, that I'm probably gonna get one that's, you know, like around 0.1. But I'm also might gonna get one that's 0.4. And these are all the same load, you know. It just looks like I shot load development on paper. And so, anyways,
I watched you do that test.
I know.
And
the board looks like I did load development.
Yeah, it does.
But I didn't.
Boy, you need to get a handle on that.
I know. It's like, yeah. So that's why I've started to shoot higher round. So, and temperature does a little bit, like, right, if you shoot a 5-shot group but then shoot a 10-shot group, yes, that's statistics, yeah. But at the same time, that's temperature. But if you shoot two, so a lot of times what I'll do to figure out, like, hey, what is this barrel, and I, because I don't know the number, there is a number that say if you're looking for a gun that shoots an average group size, so extreme spread of 0.6, because I want my extreme spread on my group size under probably 0.8, right? So that means my gun has to be an average group size of 0.3 to 0.35-ish. Average group size. You know, that's a really, really good shooting gun to me. And that means I'm going to expect groups anywhere from in the zeros when I show up to the range. So anywhere from 0 to 0.8 on the extreme spread. But I don't ever want to see anything over that 0.8 mark. Most of the time my guns don't shoot that 0.8. Most of the time it's 0 to 0.6. So I know that's an average group size of about 0.3. And if my gun is zeroed properly, my bullets will never go more than 0.1 mils away from, because 0.1 mils is 0.36. 0.36 inches. So that means it's never going any more than 0.1 mils away from my zero, or wherever my gun zeroed. That to me is my goal, right? That's tough to get, but I'll shoot like, say, a lot of 10 shot groups. Like if I get two 10 shot, like I'll show up, shoot a 10 shot group, and then I don't want that over, you know, say a half inch or 0.6 extreme spread, and shoot a couple of those. If I shoot two of those, I feel pretty good about that barrel. I feel like that barrel shoots good.
Right.
When they start getting bigger than that, that's when I start getting worried. But as long as it's not chucking rounds outside of that 0.8 on my couple of 10-shot groups, I'm pretty comfortable shooting that gun in a match. Because I know that that's going to accurately tell me what it is. Thing is when I change my... when I change my load much, so we're saying, like, you know, if I change my load, like I'll hear people be like, oh, I added, you know, 2-3 tenths of powder, and that just made this huge difference. Well, when I add 2-3 tenths of powder, it might, like, I might think, because I shot a small 1-5-shot group that's smaller, I might think it made a difference. But a lot of times when I take that load and do my, like, you know, a couple of 10-shot groups, when I do that, like I'm saying, shoot a 10-shot group, let it cool, shoot another 10-shot group, it doesn't really change those.
Yep. Pick your speed.
Yep. So, exactly. A lot of times now, I just pick the velocity that I want to run that bullet because I like the recoil there. I feel like it's away from pressure. I feel like it's a good balance of everything, like recoil,
shooting the rain, shooting the snow, shooting the heat.
Yep. And then I just I run that there, and it should shoot. And when it stops shooting and performing to the what I think is a proper accuracy, then I'm done with the barrel. What do you is that about what you think? That's a long-winded.
That's exactly what I think. Yes,
it's a long-winded deviation that I might get some heat or some pushback on. Like, people might not like that idea because I just ruined what they did all last weekend on load.
Well,
all
right. That's, I mean, it goes back to what I was saying. If it's goofy, get rid of it.
Yeah.
You know, if you're getting flyers, you shouldn't be getting flyers. You know, and
I don't know. Do you think that you can tune flyers out?
No.
Like, with a load?
No, I don't think you can.
I agree.
I think if you get a flyer, you know, if you shoot a five-shot group and you get a flyer consistently, that's what I'm saying is goofy.
Yeah, no, I agree. Did that make sense how I explained that?
It did.
Okay. Because I know I'm probably going to get some questions on that.
No, I think you explained it a lot better than I did. Thanks for clarifying.
No, that's not what I was doing. I wasn't even clarifying. I felt like you were right on the money. I just had that load development thought in my mind for a while, because the more you know about statistics, the less you believe in how well a five shot, three shot, or sometimes even a 10 shot group will actually represent the accuracy of your rifle.
Yeah.
Because I really don't care about, I want to know how many of my 200 rounds that I shoot at a match is going to go where I tell it to go. Right.
Well, it's the only, it goes back to the trust. I mean, if it doesn't do that, then you start questioning yourself. Am I losing it? Am I, what's going on here? Am I going blind? What, your confidence level is going out the window real quick with something like that. And that's, to me, that's where it ends up, is messing with your head.
Yeah. Well, and if you go back to even that 0.6 average group size rifle and the 0.3 average group size rifle, and I'm saying average five-shot group size, that's a point. That means that 0.6 gun is not a horrible gun. It just means that so go one standard deviation away from the average, 0.6 and 0.8. That means that the rounds that you shoot, so one standard deviation away is where 67% of your rounds are going to be at.
Mm-hmm.
So that means between 0.2 and 0.4 on your one gun inch groups, that means 67% of your groups are going to be right there. But then you got to go one more, and it's like another 17%. I want to say it's like I can't remember how many it is, but it's another 17 or something percent. But one more standard deviation is like, I want to say it's like two standard deviations from the average. It's like, I think it's 90 something percent of your I think that's 90-something percent of the rounds are going to be within there. But in the other one, it's going to be between 0.1 or 1 mil or 1 minute and 0.2. And so, they're going to be close, but it's just so much tighter, and you can have so much more confidence in a gun. And to develop that confidence, it just takes more rounds. And me and you both saw it this year where we thought, Because like I think the tuners are in the same category where you may be able to get slight increases in accuracy from both load development and this. But where I'm talking average group size changing from, you know, I think you can make deviations in the tenth of an inch on average, you know. So you might be able to take a gun that's an average of 0.4 down to maybe 0.3. Right. I don't know how or what the magic sauce is to be able to get it to do that, but it's really hard. Like it's because how do you know which one is good and which one's bad if you're just shooting five shots? So I think it takes a little bit more of that, you know. But I think there's big things you can do. You can change your, like we've talked about a lot on this show, is just barely today we've talked about changing the barrel. But there's also, you can change the brass and you can change the bullet. I think those make big differences. I think powder makes a small difference, but it's nothing like what we think in terms of bullets, barrels, and brass. I think those make huge differences. That's why I use Alpha brass. That's why I use Berger bullets. Those are the reasons why, and that's why I run benchmark barrels, because I know that those are high quality components that are going to make sure that my rounds go where I want them to go. Then, you know, as far as powder and that, I do know powder makes it. It might not make as big a difference on your group size, but it makes a difference on like standard deviations of velocity and stuff like that.
Well, I'm going to go one more because I think my gunsmith's the best gunsmith in the world.
It's probably true. I do think that makes a difference. Because that goes with the barrel though, right? Your chamber job.
Yeah. That's, you know, who chambers that, you know, he puts some magic dust on that thing or something, but man, the consistency of what that Smith does. And I thank him every day, every time I pull the trigger, he does a great job. He's very meticulous, spends a lot of time setting that thing up so it's dead center of that hole. And I think that means a lot too. But yeah, you're right. That goes with the barrel. But I had to give Garrett a...
Well, yeah, it goes with barrel, it goes with brass, it goes with bullets, because it allows each one of them to do their job, right?
Each one of them to be natural point of aim. It's not going to rattle down that barrel. It's, you know, it's right there.
Yep.
Every time. So
straight chamber, I mean, it makes a big difference.
It sure does.
I mean, yeah. And I'm not saying that there's not a lot of good gunsmiths out there, but I agree. I think Garrett is a world-class gunsmith. I mean, there's an argument for him being one of the best in the country. So, and just a shameless plug, he did tell me if anybody's looking for a carbon fiber, like it's a carbon 6.5 Creed, it's like a perfect NRL hunter setup or just like a hunting setup. It's chambered in 6.5 Creed, ready to go, sitting there. The carbon barrel. It's got like a AG composite stock, pretty nice gun. So if anybody's looking for one, just throwing that out there.
There's one ready to go out the door.
Yep, ready to go right now. So
yeah, he's a phenomenal gunsmith. I think I've used a lot of them and I've never been happier. So
yep.
Anyway,
so, and both you and I have seen increases in accuracy just on changing the gunsmith. So, it obviously makes a big deal. When a guy's looking for small things, what things actually make differences, right? And that's one of them.
Yes, it is.
So, anyways, I know we've covered all kinds of topics and one kind of controversial one. So, yeah, that's been fun.
I look forward to answering the questions.
Yeah, looking forward to people hearing that. And so I'm not saying that anybody that's done low development has just wasted their time, but I kind of am saying that at the same time. Just, I don't know exactly what to make of it, right? I know that Brian Litz has wrote about this in his book, and I'd like to read his chapter on it because I've thought about this for a long time and talked to several people about it.
We've both done it, and we, you know, and to convince ourselves to that route, you know, it's doing the same thing to us. So,
yeah, and I might have what they call confirmation bias. So if you know statistics, confirmation bias, look it up. It's this. It means you look at the statistics in a way that confirms what you want to see, right? Nope. If you're like me, you hate load development. You hate loading, so you don't want to do it. And so if you start to see statistics that line up to show what you want to see, that's called confirmation bias. Maybe I have some. I really don't think I do. I feel like I because I'm willing to do it. I'm willing to do the load development. I'm willing to do anything. If I can do something to make a difference, I will do it. But I just got to throw that out there so people know that. But like, and I think the tuner thing, I think it can work. I don't. In theory, all these things make sense. Other than the amount, right? I feel like it's really hard to get an amount shot basically out of your barrel that is a statistically relevant amount of rounds to be able to accurately represent what your barrel is going to do over the course of a match. And that's what I'm interested in, knowing what it's going to do over the course of a match, or even the next 10, to know that group size, if I do it again, is repeatable within a 95% confidence interval, right? That's what I want to know. And if I shoot 5 rounds, with one load, unless that gun is ultra accurate, we're talking ultra, ultra accurate, meaning the average group size is super low, to be able to repeat that within a tenth of an inch, within a 95% confidence interval is really hard to do, because you don't know. But there is an amount of rounds out there that will accurately predict that, and it's going to vary based on the average group size of your gun. So, anyways, that's too much math. I'm tired of talking about math. I hate statistics anyways, and I've had to take way too many of them classes.
Well, I think you're spot on. It only makes sense. You know, just step outside the box, because you've done all this low development, let it go. Pick a speed you like. Shoot good components, and everybody will be happy.
Yeah.
It's easier.
Test it. I'd like somebody to test it, you know? Like, because I don't always have the time to do it, but maybe next time you do some load development, just for fun, load up, you know, 20 of the best load that it shot and 20 of the worst load that it shot. Go shoot 4 more groups or whatever, 4 more 5-shot groups with that. And then get the average group size of each one. So, and see 20 or 25, over 20 or 20 or 25 of each one of those, and be like, and see if it makes a difference. If it does, cool. Then you know, like, okay, Morgan is full of crap. If it doesn't, or maybe it doesn't mean that, but maybe it makes a small difference. Then cool. I'm glad. I'd love to hear about it. If it doesn't, I'd also like to hear about it. You know, like, it'd be cool. So if somebody gets the gumption to do it, let me know about it. I'm really interested.
The Morgan King Challenge. There you go, folks. Give it a try. I've tried it. I balked at it. I'm a believer.
You did try it?
I did, yes.
Oh, boy.
Well, you know, I got thinking that most stages are 10 rounds, so why aren't I shooting 10 rounds?
Yeah, you know I changed a while ago.
Yeah. It's been a year, maybe 2 years since you've changed.
Yeah.
So, but I'm right there with you. I like this speed. I shoot a dasher at BR speeds. I don't crank it out there anymore. I like the lower recoil, and I don't know. So I shoot my dasher right around 2800, and that's where I've shot the last probably six barrels.
And I shoot my 6.5 Creed at Grendel speeds.
Yeah. But it is. It's pick your speed.
It really
is. Try it, folks.
Try it. Interested to hear about it. And hopefully you've stuck around for my rambling and our talking, but I feel like I think it was a useful ramble. But I'm interested to hear people's feedback. And thanks again for listening. And if you have any questions, hit us up on Facebook or Instagram. I try to get to people's questions. I don't always. I'll do my best. I've been really trying to get those turret labels out to people. When they ask, sometimes I'm doing something and then I try to get back to it, but sometimes I forget. But bear with me, and if I don't do it within a day or two, probably send me another message to say, hey, send me that label and I'll send it to you.
Hey Morgan, you forget about me?
Yeah, that's all you gotta say, and I will. I'll do it. But like I said, Instagram, I can't send files on Instagram again. So if you did it on Instagram, that might be probably part of the problem. Do it on. Send me the message on Facebook. That's gonna be the best way, because then I can send the file direct to you. That's the easiest way for me to do it. And so, if you want it, send me a message on Facebook Messenger. So, and I'd like to just hurry and put a shout out to basically all my sponsors as we're coming up on the PRS finale.
Good idea.
Yeah, I appreciate all their support. This will be the third year in a row I've went into the PRS finale with 300 points. And to be able to do that, and to travel, and to be able to stay competing at that level for that amount of time, it takes a lot of people behind the scenes that help me out, make sure I have the equipment I need. So I don't want to forget anybody, so I have them written down so I don't forget people. But I got to get to the right note in my notebook, so I got them up here. But let's see. So Lone Peak Arms, they build, both you and I shoot those and shoot for them. They build the, I don't know, you take it away.
Oh man, I don't know where to begin with that. The smoothest action you can get.
Yep.
And they'll run in filth.
Oh yeah.
The dust that I've had on build up on mine, you couldn't even read Lone Peak on it. It was so dusty, and it still run and fed and shot phenomenal. You can't go wrong with Lone Peak, and I can't say enough good about them.
No, they're amazing actions. Priest Precision, we've both raved about Garrett on this show, so I don't know that we need to keep going, but we both agree he is he's one of the best gunsmiths in the country, period.
He's number one in my book.
Yep,
he really is.
Yep. Armageddon Gear built the best soft goods for this game. I mean, they're shooters, and it's stuff built by shooters for shooters. it doesn't get any better than that. If you're going to play the PRS game, you need a game changer built by Armageddon Gear with Sandfill. Just bottom line. Leopold Optics, we both shoot those. The Leopold Mark V, I truly believe, is one of the best scopes on the market. They're rugged, dependable, consistent, track amazing. The reticle's awesome. The glass is good, and honestly, for the money, it's the I think it's safe to say that it's one of the best scopes on the market. But for the money, it is the best, bar none.
I agree.
I mean,
I sure like mine.
Oh yeah. Masterpiece Arms, both of us. Obviously, we shoot Masterpiece Arms. Both of us shot Masterpiece Arms chassis before we were sponsored by Masterpiece Arms as well. Same with me on every one of those sponsors so far. I shot them before I was sponsored by them.
Yep.
So, and I've talked about them on there. We both shoot a Matrix chassis. They're awesome. Alpha Munitions, both of us shoot Alpha shoot 4 and shoot Alpha Munitions brass. That stuff we just talked about the 3 B's of accuracy, barrels, bullets, and brass, and that stuff is awesome.
Yes, it is. I can't say enough about Alpha. They're top notch. I've been through their factory a couple times, and man, it's a nice facility, and they do a good job.
Oh yeah. Yeah, those are Well,
and you know, great people.
Yeah, I was gonna say Bob and Tom are some of the best guys there are.
Yeah, I love them. They're great. So get you some Alpha brass.
Yep, Bix and Andy triggers. We both shoot Bix and Andy triggers. They're awesome. The TaxSport Sport Pro. I run it around 4 to 6 ounces. Thing just, I don't know. I've gotten pretty used to it. I've been using them for a couple of years now, and they are pretty dang nice triggers. Single stage. I run a single stage curved, or either just their standard curved, or their Gator shoe. The Gator shoe's awesome, or even their lined ribbed shoe is pretty dang sweet too. I don't have a lot of the Gator shoes. I wish I could have a Gator shoe on every trigger, but it seems like I'm always short on triggers, so I'm always like trying to shuffle them around, and then I take what I can get. And so it's any of those. My favorites, if you ask me what my favorite shoe is, and I had to take one right now, I want a curved Gator shoe. I'm not a huge fan of straight shoe triggers, just because I feel like I can set my finger at so many different places on that. And yes, it feels the same, but it's not.
No, it increases or decreases your.
Yeah, based on where you're at on it.
Yep.
Yeah, so I like the curved.
So, yeah, me too.
Burger bullets. We both shoot Burger bullets. It's hard not to love. Another one of those bees.
Consistency of. Oh yeah.
Yep, they're freaking awesome. Benchmark barrels. Another one of the bees. They're awesome barrels. They shoot good. Bullet Central. I forgot to talk about them. They make just some awesome products. They carry Vix and Andy as well. And then Strike Without Warning. I've talked about that the tuning muzzle brake on this show, and the TMB is the best muzzle brake on the market, bar none. It is what it is. I don't feel out of line saying that either.
Nope.
So
no, I've seen and experienced what that brake will do, and it's amazing that, you know, the thought and the engineering and everything that he's put into this thing is just, it's over the top.
Yep. It's pretty sweet. It
really is.
Yeah, so if you're looking for another muzzle brake, that's the one. Anarchy Outdoors, both of us shoot for Anarchy. Man, it's just, like I say, when I go through this list, I think of the people behind behind these companies, and that's what's really cool to me. All these companies support our game, and I'm just humbled that they're willing to support me and my shooting, because they're really great people, you know. And like that's another one of them companies, Anarchy Outdoors, Aaron Gines there.
Yeah.
It's hard not to love Aaron. I like the heck out of that guy. They carry a lot of cool stuff. They carry clothing, anything you need for like a RPR or anything that got handled, bolt handles, all kinds of stuff. They stock half of the stuff on this list, if not more than half of the stuff. They're just kind of a distributor, and they, well, kind of just like anything else, like Short Action Precision or any of those deals where you can buy stuff online or in person, but mainly it's an online store. Anarchy Outdoors, though, they're out of Logan, Utah. They do a good job. Two Vets tripods that make great tripods. It's hard not to like him. He supports the game. I mean, he is a veteran. It's a veteran owned company. Make great tripods. It's hard not to like it. Eagle Eye Ammo, that's one that's brand new for me. I'm going to start shooting for Eagle Eye. Basically, it's mass-produced, hand-loaded ammo. So, pretty cool. And as I get shooting it more, I will talk about it more on the show. And then Brant Built Concepts. What do you think about your Brant Built Concepts level thing?
Well, I got two of them now.
Yeah.
You know, being able to look at the target and see the bubble at the same time, staying comfortable in your glass and keeping your natural point of aim, and I think it shaves seconds off every stage. Like I know it does.
Yeah. I was talking to...
I don't have to readjust, you know, refocus when I look down at my bubble. Or, you know, look at the bubble that's attached to the optic or wherever your bubble is. There's no refocusing. It's right there in your peripheral. You don't have to take your eye off the target. It's so cool. To, you know, my hat's off to Mr. Brant. He's a smart man.
I know, Devin.
I think it's genius what he's done.
Devin's a thinking guy, you know. He just barely started shooting this game, and he comes in here and he says, that piece right there is missing. We need that. And, you know, so yeah. He comes up with a way to convert any one of your send it levels. You replace the housing, run some fiber optic cables to your ocular housing, and then you put a little piece that he has that's like machined, and it for your scope, and you put it on there, and now you can see your send it lights out of your dominant eye while shooting all the time,
right at the bottom of the curve of your ocular.
How is that not, like, how did we not already have that? You know what I mean? Like, it's just,
yeah,
I don't know. It's smart. It's just genius. And it's something that should have already been there. But Brant's come along and done it. So my hat's off to him.
Every time I look in my eyes, smile every time I look. You know, just, it is.
It's awesome, ain't it?
It is.
Yep.
Good job, Devin.
Yep. So, anyways, thanks for hanging out with us tonight. And yeah, so. And thank you to the sponsors for standing behind us. And anyways, we'll talk to you guys later.